Winners fly through the smokescreen of impossibility. Winners fly through the smokescreen of impossibility. What does that mean? Have you ever been flying in an airplane and all of a sudden the weather changed and a fog came in and you couldn't see the ground anymore and you had to land someplace? That can be a very difficult thing. And how do you handle the situation? If you have to land and you can't see, and you haven't had what you call it instrument flight training, and instruments by which to fly, where there's nothing you can see, what do you do? Well, the big problem is that winners fly through the smokescreen of impossibility. They don't allow that to be a challenge to them. And now Sylvia did not follow the rules of the game. The rules of the game are that you always have the dogs put away before we begin our talk. Because if the dogs are going to be having fun while we're giving the talk, then we have that noise to disturb them. And when the noise disturbs us, then we are unable to have a harmonious talk. Now, that's see, Sylvia's going through the same thing right now. Sylvia is drinking her juice, and the dog is licking her chin, and she's not hearing a word I'm saying. You understand? She can't, because she's got too many distractions. Now, it'd probably be wise just to take the dog and put him in the bathroom or something. Is he not happy in the bathroom unless he has his cage there?
Yeah.
Because he starts tearing up the bathroom. Well, that's too bad, isn't it? Why can't his cage be right out here and he can be in his house, right in his pen? Is he not happy there? Why do we have to take his cage and move it away? No answer. And why do we move his cage from its secure position where it keeps his pen closed, and then we complain that somebody else moved the cage away from the edge of the pen so he could get between the pen and the wall? Why do we do that? We have to be very careful. The very things that we do make us look kind of silly when we say them, when we are not paying attention to what we're doing. All of us have a responsibility, and that's the responsibility to ourselves. Now, what do you want love to look like? What do you want love to experience? What do you want love to experience? And what do you want love to experience? What do you want love to experience? Oh, only good, only good, only good. Well, Ingeborg really doesn't want only good for these dogs. Ingeborg wants them to love her. So in the past, Ingeborg would get down on the floor, wet the dog's food, and then force feed it into their mouths. And they just loved that attention, and they got wider and wider and wider. And we don't need to buy the love of our pets. If our pets do not love us because we are lovable, then we must get rid of the pets. Because we're not going to have pets around here who are not thinking that we're just the most lovable people on earth. You understand? Mm-hmm. The same with children. Parents should not have children who are not lovable. If parents have children who are not lovable, the parents should get rid of them. Or get rid of the parents. You say, Herb, that is so silly. That is so unrealistic. That's so... No. Who are the mentors, the trainers of the of the children? Who train the children? Who teach the children to be orderly? Who teach the children to be mannerly? Who teach the children to get along in society? Who teach the children to get excited about school, to think it's the most wonderful training ground in the world? Or not? Whenever a child doesn't like school, you can be sure the parents have no interest in school. And the parents disparage school. And the parents have done it over a period of time. It's very true. People who have the least schooling often respect schooling the most because they recognize how valuable it is. And so they're always extolling schooling. And the children can get too much or can be encouraged. It all depends on how the extolling is done. To be a winner in teaching your children how to be harmonious with life, to be a winner in teaching your pets how to be harmonious with life and how to get along with society, is like flying through the smoke screen of impossibility. How many parents think that they make a mistake when their children make a mistake? Very few. Very few parents think it's their responsibility. They have that smoke screen up in front of them that they're not responsible for that other life. But yet, how many parents take time to cuddle their children, to love their children, to feed their children, to house their children, to clothe their children, to give their children things to amuse them, toys and responsible activities? Not many. You say, well, most of them do. No, not really. If you were to go through life and you were to see, let's say, the 6 billion people on Earth, how many, and then let's just say of the families, of the mothers and fathers who have children, of the mothers and fathers who have children, what percentage would you say spend time with the children every day, training them in loving pursuits of being a beautiful human being? Well, could we say 10%? Could we say 50%? Could we say 80%? Quite likely 80%. You say, 80%? Gee, it doesn't seem like that. As I look at youngsters today and young people today, they're pretty bad. They're pretty unruly. They're not well-mannerly or well-kept or anything else like that. And then I say to you, okay, where do you see these people? On the street and playing here and there. How many of the children are on the street that are in the neighborhood? If a neighborhood has 10 children, 2 or 3 of them are on the street. The rest of them are in the house doing mannerly things, being with their parents, being loved, being directed, being cared for. This world would be the most rotten world in the world, in the universe, if children were not raised by their parents. Children really are raised by their parents. We see the exception. And the exception becomes so dominant, we call it the rule. We look at our prisons and we say, look at how many thousands of people are in prison. And then we look at the population. And we say, here's a population of, let's say, 100 people. And of the 100 people, maybe 4 or 5 are in prison. Well, now, of the 100 people, perhaps the 4 or 5 were not trained by their parents at home to be mannerly people, to be harmonious with the society they're living in. And people can't see it through that smoke screen to the wonderful dream of the impossibility. See, the smoke screen is an impossibility that says it can't be done. And we want to categorize everything according to the smoke screen. And when you get down to it, what happens when the smoke screen disappears? What happens when the morning haze disappears? You drive up here on the mountain, and it's clear and beautiful. And you go down to the city, and on the way down, you go through a cloud that's hanging midway on the mountain. And you drive down through it, and that's a smoke screen of impossibility. You can't drive fast. You can't drive carefully. You can't do anything. You just have to take it easy. And when you take it easy, everything is in divine order. Now, why is it you don't drive fast? You might bump something. Why is it you don't drive fast? Someone may be having a problem somewhere. Why is it you don't drive fast? Your visibility is not as strong as far as it might be. How often in 365 days of the year do we have fog? Maybe 8 or 10 days, maybe more, but not often. How long does it stay? By 10 o'clock, the fog always burns off on the beach. Now, What's this got to do with anything? But this is the smokescreen of invisibility. It's not a a major or primary thing. It is just the exception to the rule. Is a foggy day in London the rule? It seems to be, at least that's what they say. But if London were in a fog, let's say 60% of the time, why would people want to live in that type of environment? And so you can be sure that London is not in a fog 60% of the time. It has its fogs and it has its good thick fogs. But that's because it's surrounded by ocean. And one ocean is warm and one ocean is cold. And so the two experience these type of layers and the fog is there. But it's not an impossibility. People know their way around in the fogs. People understand it because they live with it and they experience it. So it's not an impossibility to them, but it is to others. But when you're a winner in life, and we want all of our children to be winners, when you're a winner in life, and we want all of our adults to be winners, when you're a winner in life, and we want all of our politicians, all of our businessmen, all of the people who run the world, we want them to be winners. How are they trained to be winners? Generation by generation. Generation by generation. The generation I came up in was a very happy generation. It was a generation of Leave It to Beaver. It was a generation of the Brady Bunch. It was a generation of families that cared about families, even though the families might be mixed. They might be his and her family, and it might be other families. But the thing is, what's that all about? What's about is cooperation with society, cooperation with the rules. And what happens when you cooperate? You're a winner. You like yourself. You enjoy yourself. And when you don't cooperate with the rules, then what happens to you? Then everything seems to go haywire and nothing works out for you and you're unhappy with yourself. Do you want to be a winner? I mean, that sounds like a nice, desirable thing. If you want to be a winner, then you just fly right through those smoke screens, through those fogs, through those impossibility things, and you come right out the other side and you have achieved it. There was a little boy. He was 17 years old, and he had a dream, and his dream was to go around the world in a small sailboat. And he knew sailing pretty well. He was not born on the sea. He was not living by the sea. He was not every moment in a boat, you know, that it was part of him, but he had this dream. And his parents assisted him with his dream in getting the boat and getting all of the things that he needed. And then he started around the world without knowing all of the rules of the road, without knowing the weather and without knowing anything. But you know, what did he start with? Tell me. His dream to go around the world. His dream to go around the world harmoniously, comfortably, beautifully. And in his entire journey around the world, he made several stops, but in his entire journey around the world in a year or two, which it took him to do it, not once was he killed. Not once was he destroyed by the ocean or by the winds and the waves. Not once. Oh, it gave him some pretty tough times at times. And he took pictures of himself as he was, everything was, you know, flying because the weather was pretty tough. And when he came around the Cape of South Africa there, he had some pretty tough times because the oceans are beating against each other. And it's a very rough area as it is on the bottom of South America. Not as much in South America as it is on South Africa. But it is terrible. Oh my, those oceans are just going back and forth. When they have yacht races that go around the world, the tip of South, the Cape of Good Hope, you see why they call it Good Hope, the Cape of Good Hope at the tip of South Africa there is really something. But they don't let that be a blinder for them. They don't let that be a smokescreen. They come through. Some don't succeed. But who are they who succeed? They're the winners. They're the ones who have learned not to believe in the smokescreens of impossibility, but to believe in their dream, whatever the dream may be, and not to say their dream is right or wrong or good or bad, just that their dream is, and then to flow with it. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to flow with your dream? Are you ready to even know what your dream is? Are you ready to know what you'd like to do next? Well, some of you say, well, I'd like to stay right here. And I say, that's fine. Some of you say, well, I'd like to travel the world and go lecturing and give seminars like you do, Herb. You know, that'd be fun too. And some of you say, well, I'd like to establish churches, or I'd like to go and teach and do different things, or stay here and teach or whatever. Well, I don't care what your dream is. In fact, I don't care at all, because it's not my dream. But whatever your dream is, go for it. Don't expect me to get excited about your dream. I will not discourage you, but I will not encourage you, because I could never encourage something to do something that could be disastrous. And it could be disastrous for this young man to go around the world in that little boat. But it was his dream, and his parents were free to let him go. It's amazing. And they helped to pay his way, you know. And they flew to different parts of the world to see how he was doing when he came to that point, because he had his radio and he kept in contact. But not once did they say, do you want to quit? They said, son, whatever your desire is, we're backing you. And along the way, he even picked up a girlfriend. And, you know, he wasn't slow. Even while he was on his boat, his dreams kept... And who would ever think that some girl would fall in love with this kid doing this? Of course, a lot of girls would, but enough to follow him from port to port. She would be at the port when he would land. And, of course, that made his trip all the more exciting. You know? It's a great story. It's a beautiful book.
How old was he?
16, 17, something like that. You can buy the book. We should probably buy a copy of it. Mm-hmm. It's Around the World of Something, you know, this kid. But he's amazing. And he still had an innocence and a gentleness about him, which made it all nice. That his character might not be absolutely, you know, free of any little faults, that's for sure. But he is good. And very good. Winners fly through the smokescreen of impossibility, and they arrive at their goal. I love you.